You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to the Palpably Unfair podcast. My name is Kyle Posey. I am joined by another Philadelphia Eagles fan because that is how my job works these days. Ben Natan. Ben, he writes for Bleeding Green Nation. I will give him the floor right now to tell you a little bit more about himself. Ben, what up, man?
Hey, how you doing? It's been a while since I came on an SB Nation podcast. I guess they're finally letting me back on these things. Yeah, I've been at Bleeding Green for 5 years now, writing about the NFL draft. I also do some like basic NFL and sports coverage at SB Nation, talking about like politics and social issues and sports, but mostly the draft, working our way through another strange draft season. Last year, we at least had a combine, but this year it feels even a little bit stranger.
What is going like? What is next? Because Roger Goodell said he expects to have fans in, but they have to do all the COVID testing. So, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think we will get back to some sort of normalcy this season?
I think that there's definitely going to be fans in stadiums. I think everything kind of hinges on how vaccination efforts go this summer. As long as the states are going to allow them to fill up the stadiums, they're going to fill the stadiums up, because I know they lost a lot of money this past season, and they're probably looking to recoup pretty significantly and do so however they can. So as long as, you know, the states allow and the federal government allows for, you know, max occupancy at stadiums and stuff like that, I think that's probably what they're going to be going for.
So today we're going to talk about the pro day circuit. It has been a busy week. There have been a lot of fast people running, more so than usual this year because, you know, there was no combine, and the places that are reporting these times, whether it be the school or where the athletes are training, get to self-report these times. So conveniently, everyone is running very, very fast. Let's start with LSU because they have a wide receiver who did not play in 2020, who is going to be a top 10 pick, and he deserves that, Ja'Marr Chase. Ja'Marr Chase he only weighed, I believe it was 202 pounds. Did you expect him to be bigger than that before we get any further?
I probably expected him to be somewhere in the mid 200, between 205 to 210. Cause he's not exactly he's 5'11", 6 foot, I think. And for a guy to be, 6 foot and 205, I mean, he's rocked up. I mean, there's not an ounce of body fat on him. So I'm not really surprised that it's maybe lighter than maybe people thought, but he's not small. He's not a small guy.
Not at all. And you could see him. He's 200 pounds, but he's a big 200 pounds. So his test numbers, 41-inch vertical, 11-foot broad jump, and he was timed, and I'm using air quotes here, 4.38 40-yard dash. And when I watch Chase, I don't see a 4.3 guy, but I do see that type of explosiveness where he does jump. You know, he has that 41-inch vertical. You can see that when the ball is in his hands. I would describe him as a guy who has next man speed. When he gets the ball, he has that adrenaline rush where he gets another gear. But he's not a 4.3 guy, and at the same time, I don't think that's a problem. That's not me hating on him, or that's not a knock to say he's not one of the fastest human beings in the world. He's only kind of fast. He's 4.4 really fast, I guess I should qualify that. So what was your takeaway from Chase's pro day?
I wasn't super surprised that he ran fast just because of what he was doing after the catch when he was at LSU. They used him on a lot of short passes during his sophomore year. And when you're able to take a slant to the house as a 19-year-old in the SEC, running away from the entire defense, I mean, that signals that you have some sort of speed. I mean, the difference between 4.38 and 4.45 is minimal. We as NFL draft people see a huge difference between them, but on the field, I mean, there isn't if you're running sub 4.45, you are fast as hell.
Right.
So I was never really worried about his speed. The fact that he ran 4.38 is obviously impressive. I know that down in LSU, I think they have like the official hand timer that the combine use, like the same guy. So I wonder how much we're going to factor that into how much we care about the times. But you can't fake a jump, right? So that vertical, those broad jump numbers are kind of indicative of the kind of player he is. And the thing with Chase, and I don't want to throw shade too much at Joe Burrow, but I think that Chase is probably more just because of Joe Burrow's playing style as a quarterback. We didn't get to see that downfield separation from Chase because Burrow's style almost forced him into more contested situations as a receiver. So you saw Chase winning a lot of jump balls during that season where he put up 20 touchdowns. And you think, okay, well, maybe this is his game. Maybe he's only going to be able to win in contested situations. He's not the type of guy who gets separation downfield. But I think his best football is still ahead of him. If you pair him with a quarterback who can really put it on him down the field, I mean, you're going to see a guy whose yards per reception go way up. His separation down the field is going to be a lot more evident because he's going to be getting different kinds of targets in the NFL than he did maybe at LSU.
So this is a Palpably Unfair podcast. We can call it how it is. Baby arm Burrow. We can say what it is, what the real reason was. And we saw it in the NFL last year. So Jamar Chase also 3.98 three cone, or short shuttle, which is very, very impressive. So he can move side to side. He has that agility. And another receiver just tells you the type of talent that they have at LSU, man. Terrence Marshall, he also had a 39-inch vertical. He had a 10.4 broad jump, which is very, very good. Just Chase's 11 broad jump is unreal. And
right.
Marshall also ran an unofficial 4.38. Have you watched much Marshall at all?
Yeah, I mean, Marshall feels like an easy evaluation for me in terms of a guy who can stretch the field vertically. And I think that because he was asked to do that so often at LSU, where you had a Justin Jefferson and a Jamar Chase last year, who were kind of able to do like the nitty gritty stuff. And then Terrace Marshall was like, for lack of a better comparison, he was like your three-point shooter coming off the bench. You can, you know, limited targets, but high efficiency kind of guy. And he really showed out a lot this year as a deep threat. His speed is evident. He's got soft hands. Maybe not the type of guy who you're using in like contested situations or using over the middle. But someone who can make a defense respect you and respect your passing game. I would love to see him get it on team like the Chiefs or something like that. Like they love running a track team on their offense, and having a guy like Terrace Marshall feels like the perfect fit for what they want to do. I think he's been getting first round hype, which for the right team makes a lot of sense. But you know, if you're a team like the Eagles who needs like an X guy, like they need like your number one guy, I don't know if Marshall's that guy for you, but definitely a guy who can be like a high efficiency role player.
Yeah, I compared Terrence Marshall to Pierre Garçon because you see that deep threat and he is going to make plays no matter what because he is faster and stronger than you. You mentioned the high efficiency, the three-point shot. I think when you also talk about a first round wide receiver, he needs to be scheme proof. Like he has to be a guy where any offense, oh, he can do this. Oh, he can do that. There shouldn't be any qualifiers or caveats for a first round wide receiver. So that's why I would be out on him as a first rounder. But I mean, we're talking about a dude who is very, very talented. And I mean, in most other wide receiver classes, he'd probably be in that top five. Oh, let's go circle back to Chase here real quick. Is he a guy that should be a shoe-in for a top 10 pick?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's a meaningful conversation to be had about comparing Chase to a guy even like Devontae Smith, who obviously has been doing it for a long time, has produced at an elite level for 2 years now, and might have a little bit more polish to his game. But I mean, at the end of the day, they're both going to be phenomenal players in the NFL. I think that there is a really good argument that Chase is going to be a better player and is a better prospect. So if you're a team like the Dolphins or the Bengals who really need a playmaker to change their offense, I mean, Chase is going to be your guy.
So LSU, I mean, they had a bunch of guys do very well at their pro day. Another guy that we mentioned before we got on here is Jabril Cox, who is a name that some people might not know. He is, I don't know if you want to call him a linebacker or safety, who knows? He's a second level defender. Let's just call him that. He performed very well. Give us kind of a background on Jabril Cox. Like what kind of stands out when you watch him? Because he is an elite level athlete. And go ahead.
So the thing with Jabril Cox I think is really interesting is that he was actually playing at North Dakota State for the bulk of his career, and he played very well. And he made the transition from being a high-level FCS defender going right into the SEC onto the LSU defense. And an LSU defense that had been depleted by the draft and was moving over to a new defensive coordinator. You know, they work with Bo Pelini this year. So there was a lot of different factors there that were kind of working against Jabril Cox. And I think the first game I really noticed him during the season was he balled out against Florida. He had an incredibly good game against Florida. And he played extremely well against Florida's high-powered passing game. I mean, when you have guys like Tony and Pitts and Grimes, I mean, lots of speed. And he was all over the field covering receivers, kind of giving Pitts some problems. And I was like, who the hell is this guy? And I did the research and it's like, okay, he came from the FCS and he played well the whole season. And I think he's 6'2", probably 225 pounds. I didn't get to see the measurements from today, but all this conversation being had about Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah out of Notre Dame as being this, you know, this really great chess piece on defense who, you know, he's speedy, he can cover the slot. People are talking about him like he's a top 20 pick, which I'm not super in on with him, but it's if he's a top 20 pick, it's like then Cox needs to be in the conversation for a top 50 pick because he's offering you that same versatility on defense. And in a pass happy NFL, having a guy who can cover the slot, cover wide receivers, cover tight ends, and also at the same time have the physicality, have the instincts to defend against the run. I mean, he's playing every down. I think that Owusu-Koramoah, he's going to have a little bit of an adjustment period to the NFL because of his style and the way that he was kind of like a run and chase linebacker. Whereas you saw Cox a lot of times playing the strong side and having no problem getting in the nitty gritty for, you know, playing defense and stopping the run. He is like, I think he's going to make a big impact from day one on an NFL defense. And, you know, him having a big pro day is not a big surprise for me. And I hope, you know, for his sake that it helps boost up his stock to where it should have been a couple weeks ago.
He was clocked in game, which is far more important than, you know, a timed 40. He was clocked at a peak speed of 21 miles an hour, which kind of gives you an idea of the elite type of speed he has. Because when you look at next gen stats, most of their elite guys, they're running in the NFL. Their top five carries are, you know, it was Raheem Mostert, 23 miles an hour. But after that, it was pretty much in the 21. So we're talking about an elite level athlete. So get speed at the second level on defense, put them on the field, and good things will happen. Do not make it any more tougher than it needs to be. Let's move on to Florida, who apparently also has a bunch of aliens working out. So Kyle Pitts, and I'm sure as an Eagles guy, you have ad nauseum spoken about him. Kyle Pitts, man, I don't know what else there is to say that has not been said. He came in at 6'5". He was 245 pounds. His vertical was surprisingly low, 33.5, but he ran a 4.4. And you see that. I remember I was just watching Kentucky's Kelvin Joseph, the cornerback Kelvin Joseph, and Pitts ran a route, got open, so like made a good juke move to get open on Joseph, and then he just runs away from him. Like, oh my goodness, like where does that come from? But you see that with Pitts in essentially every game where he just has these wow factors where you're wondering, like, why is there, like, what are the knocks on him? What can you even say bad about Pitts? It feels like whenever you do that, it's nitpicking.
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, he's not going to be really effective as an inline blocker. And it's like, all right, if you're an NFL team and you're trying to use this guy primarily as an inline blocker, it's like, you have the problem. Yeah, right. I mean, just imagine being a slot corner in the NFL and having that dude line up in front of you. Like, I would be terrified to try to defend him. And it's not just, and the thing that's crazy about him, kind of like you said, it's not just the size, it's the agility. I mean, his ability to release at the line and get open against guy. I mean, his game against South Carolina, I mean, he was getting open against JC Horn. I mean, that's yep. No joke. I mean, that is a top 10 defensive prospect in this draft, and he was getting open against him. And then his ability to play above the rim is insane. I mean, he's got what, like 84 inch wingspan, they said today,
his wingspan was 83 3/8, which is the largest wingspan for any tight end or wide receiver in the past 20 years.
Imagine trying to defend a jump ball against that guy, and No, you can't. And it, and like the thing I was saying kind of during the season and then, you know, for the Eagles after the season is there is a legitimate concern about tight ends' immediate transition to the NFL because they don't really, you know, tight ends usually take a year or two to really get comfortable playing in the league. But I mean, you're not evaluating this guy like he's Eric Ebron. Like you're evaluating this guy like he's Mike Evans. I mean, that's the kind of targets. Those are the kind of snaps that he was getting in college, playing on the outside, playing in the slot, jump balls, running away from defenses before and after the catch. I mean, like you said, there's really, you really can't nitpick on this guy. And he's a good blocker. I mean, that's the other thing. Like, you know, he's 245 pounds, so he's not as big as like your average tight end. But he's like a high effort blocker, which is the most you can ask for a guy who's going to be contributing the way he can as a pass catcher.
Yeah, he tries. And I think that is what that's what matters at the position. So you mentioned you won't be able to catch a jump ball against him. You know how that I know that that's true because it was true in the SEC against the best players in the SEC. So J.C. Horn, jump ball, no contest. Tyson Campbell, jump ball, no contest. Patrick Surtain, no jump ball, no contest. Like against the best receivers, or sorry, against the best cornerbacks who are going to be drafted in the top 50, like they had no answer for him. So
yeah, every SEC cornerback that you can think of who's gotten drafted in the last 2 years, Kyle Pitts is a highlight against them, and like a, like an unbelievable highlight. Yeah, it's like and like you watch. I mean, his Alabama game, he had an insane touchdown at the end of the Alabama game where he caught it over like two guys. Last year against LSU, I mean, he's just Like you said, you know, he's going to do it all, and there's really no knocks on him. And the fact that he tested the way that he did and measured the way that he did today is not really surprising. Makes me mad as an Eagles fan that there's no shot in hell that the Eagles are going to be able to draft him. But, you know,
if as an Eagles fan, where do you go as far as Chase or Pitts if you had your choice?
If I had my choice between Chase or Pitts, I don't know. I think I would go with Pitts. I think that one of the things that holds me back, and it's specifically to the Eagles, is their wide receiver group is easily the worst in the NFL. And it's not just the worst in the NFL, it's one of the youngest in the NFL. So you're talking about a team that is in desperate need of a guy now who can come in day one in the 2021 season and start producing. And with Chase, while it's likely that's going to happen, you have a guy who hasn't played football in a year, and there's a chance that it, you know, maybe it takes some time for him to get adjusted to the speed in the NFL. And the Eagles just can't afford that with their current wide receiver group, especially if they want to properly bring along a guy like Jalen Hurts. Pitts, I have no concern about not only immediately translating to the NFL, but with a young quarterback like Jalen Hurts, giving him a target who's going to be able to catch anything in any situation, in any alignment. It's very nitpicky and very specific to the Eagles situation. I think probably a team like the Dolphins or maybe the Bengals would probably go with Chase over Pitts. But I think Pitts is going to be a special player, and he's the type of guy who can help a team now. Whereas Chase, there is a slight chance that won't be the case.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
But let's move on to Kadarius Toney, who is a very popular figure, but for me, he's a bit polarizing because I don't really see it. I see a guy that's going to be overdrafted. He was always going to show out at his pro day. That should not be a surprise. So 6 feet, 193 pounds, 40 and a half vertical, 11.6 broad jump, 4.41 and 4.44 40 yard dashes. All very, very good. Well above average. He's an explosive athlete. He looks like a joystick when he has the ball in his hands. The problem is you have to get the ball into his hands. And I saw some routes where, I mean, it looks like he's just doing way too much. He's not efficient, and that is a problem for me. I don't know if you remember a few years back at the Senior Bowl, Braxton Miller running those routes and one-on-ones. That is kind of the vibe I get with Toney, where he's just taking way too many steps that he has to, and I don't think that is going to win in the NFL. What is your take on Toney the player?
I'm with you, and I think we might have had like brief Twitter interactions about this, but he's a very flashy player, and it's hard. And I understand why people love him so much, because his highlights are so
great.
They're great. I mean, and I remember in season, obviously he's measured differently, but in season he'd catch the ball and he'd bounce off a bunch of defenders. And I'd be like, oh, that's Alvin Kamara if Alvin Kamara was a wide receiver. And that's like what he can do with the ball in his hands. But like you said, there is a whole process in the NFL, especially when he gets to the NFL, between the quarterback throwing the ball and him catching it. And it's about getting separation and about having the ability to actually secure the catch. And he's not a great route runner. It's very noisy route running. It's like somebody who's like, has like a really cool handle. I'm going to keep on making basketball comparisons, but it's like somebody who's like really cool at like really good at like doing like trick dribbles and like going through the legs and everything like that. But like, is never actually going to take a shot. Or is never going to actually going to be able to like shake a defender. And like that matters in the NFL. So like, there's going to be I think he's going to have a pretty significant learning curve. And if he ends up in a situation with an offensive coordinator or head coach who's creative about his touches, I think he can be productive early on. But kind of what we were talking about with Terrace Marshall, you're not drafting that guy in the first round. You're not drafting somebody that you need to like hold their hand through their rookie season in the first round, especially not in a class that has Kyle Pitts, that has Devontae Smith, Ja'Marr Chase, even Jalen Waddle. I put Rashad Bateman in that conversation. I mean, guys who are going to be able to contribute early in their careers. Elijah Moore is another one. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you and I are a bit on the Elijah Moore train, and he ran really well a couple days ago at the Ole Miss Pro Day. It's like, if you're looking for like a smaller playmaking wide receiver who can, you know, make a bunch of noise after the catch, Elijah Moore is probably more my guy, because he's got soft hands. He's a good route runner. He's like more of a polished player. Whereas with Toney, you're betting on his playmaking ability, but you have to figure out a way to actually get him the ball, or you're really betting on him to develop quickly as a rookie.
The difference that I'd say with Moore, who I don't think it's particularly close that he is a better prospect than Toney, I would say you're betting on yourself to get Toney the ball, whereas Moore, you know he can get open because he's proven that he can get open on every level, right? Against press, against the J.C. Horns, who he has gotten open against, who he has drawn penalty flags against. Whereas Toney, you can see a guy lock him up pretty easily, and that happens every game. So I would be a little worried about that. So let's move on to the quarterbacks. But before we do, Jalen Hurts is the Eagles quarterback, and you are an Eagles guy. Give me your quick assessment on Jalen Hurts compared to some of the top prospects in this class. Like, where would he rank in this prospect or in this draft class?
The assessment that I made for the Eagles and Jalen Hurts is that if it's not Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields, you stick with Hurts. I think that. And that's not necessarily saying that he's a better prospect than Zach Wilson or than Trey Lance. But given his, you know, already like his existing experience in the NFL, and what the Eagles kind of have around him and what they would need to put around a rookie anyway, that's the kind of trade-off that you're looking at. And with Hurts, he is not a perfect quarterback by any means, but I think the blend of his confidence, his football IQ, the way that the team has like responded to him as the quarterback is like, I think, a very significant thing. And to have a quarterback with his playmaking ability with his feet on a team that like has so few other weapons is like a serious asset to give the team any chance to win in the short term. So I besides Trevor Lawrence, like I'm a big Justin Fields guy. I think he's the QB2 in this class. I think he'd be the QB1 in any other class. And if Justin Fields was there for the Eagles, then you take him because I think that he's a special prospect. But if it's like, okay, well, it's Zach Wilson and we would have to bring him along a little bit, or it's Trey Lance and maybe there's like a developmental curve with Trey Lance, then I'd be like, okay, maybe we should just draft weapons and build the team that you have, see what Hurts can do for a year. And if he's bad, you're picking in the top five again next year for one of the quarterbacks next year, whoever that may be.
So when the Eagles' big trade went down last week, Adam Schefter reported that they tried to move up to number three, but that was only for Zach Wilson, which kind of tells you their thoughts on Justin Fields, which is incredible to me that we have this, who I think is a generational prospect, who we have seen mentioned as one of the highest graded quarterbacks to come out of high school. That was the only reason he was number two is because there was another unicorn in his class. Right. That same unicorn is in his class now. And we kind of saw what Justin Fields can be at his pro day. And obviously, you know, you have to take pro days with a grain of salt, but he's a 227-pound man who ran a 4.44. That in itself is insane. And then you get to see him throw the ball, how effortless it looked. Yes, he has a cannon, but these throws are hitting people in the face. These throws are hitting people in the numbers. Whereas, you know, you see other guys, where Zach Wilson, for example, take his pro day. While people were gushing about his pro day, he's hitting guys on the wrong shoulder. He's behind guys. He's trying to overcompensate, which Mac Jones, I felt like, did as well. But that was just not the case for Fields. He is such, I'm not going to say he's a flawless player because he does have areas to get better, but the things where people are saying is an issue, I don't see it at all, man. And I just cannot imagine a scenario where the 49ers don't take him at number three.
You know, it's interesting. I've been thinking about this for a few days, and it's crazy to think how little we've actually talked about Trevor Lawrence this offseason.
Right.
Because, I mean, I'm with you. Like, I think that this is an Andrew Luck RG3 class. I think you have two guys who, in their own class, you'd be like, that is the dude for the next 10, like the best guy we're going to see for the next 10 years. And it just happens to be that they're both in the same class and you have to rank them. I think part of that has to do with the fact, and this is, I'm getting a little like tinfoil hat, so I apologize. It's the fact that when it was Andrew Luck and RG3, you had Andrew Luck, who is going to be taking over for Peyton Manning. And we all knew that. We all knew that back in, right, 2012. Like, this is going to be the heir apparent to Peyton Manning's throne. And then you had the Heisman winner that a team just traded three first-round picks up to draft. And there was no secrecy. And we could all kind of, like, live in the hype of these two guys who are definitely going to go one and two. But because it's Jacksonville at one and the Jets at two, for whatever reason, I don't think we're having those same conversations. Like, I really don't understand why we're not talking more about Trevor Lawrence. And the whole Justin Fields thing, it feels like boredom. And that's giving it a generous analysis for why people are not being very generous. And the same thing with Trevor Lawrence. I mean, you have people saying that Zach Wilson is the best quarterback in this class. Or people saying that Mac Jones, I think the quote yesterday was Mac Jones is the most pro-ready quarterback in this class. I don't know what that means. I have no idea. Like, how do you get more pro-ready than a guy like Trevor Lawrence, who started 3 years at Clemson, played in the elite level all 3 years, and played in two national championships? Like, I don't understand that logic. And I'm getting a little bit off topic, but...
Well, no, you're not at all. And I want to talk about that. I want to talk about the pro-ready thing.
What is pro-ready?
Trey Lance started one more game than Mac Jones. If you watch what Alabama did, Mac Jones is throwing screens, and he is living off RPOs, like living off of RPOs. That is not an NFL offense. Yes, he does NFL things. Yes, Sark does NFL things. But if we're talking about pro-ready and who was asked to do what more, you would... easily come away with Justin Fields being the most pro-ready in that sense based on what he was asked to do, and then probably Trey Lance, and then down the line you get to Zach Wilson, who was playing 7-on-7 all year, and even Clemson ran some gimmicky stuff where they're running trip plays and getting Trevor Lawrence out of the pocket. I mean, yeah, he can do a lot of things because he is a superhero as far as traits go, but I just, the pro-ready thing is again, I think lazy is the better word to say, just because I don't know if we don't know how to contextualize things, but it's the Pup podcast and people just don't know what they're talking about. Let's just keep it real.
And the thing that sucks about all this is like, when I was like, you know, I'm 24, so I can't really say when I was younger, but when I was like kind of just getting into doing draft work, it like almost like felt fun to be a hater. And like, you know, it is kind of fun to be a hater, but like I've gotten to a point where in like writing about the draft where it's like, I do want to find what each of these guys does well. And I want to be optimistic about my projections for these guys and be like, this person's success in the NFL hinges on them being able to do this, or a coach being able to do this with them. Because it doesn't end up feeling like hot takery. It doesn't feel like a competition with like fellow evaluators. You're just kind of just doing your own job. So when, you know, a couple weeks ago, I was writing about Mac Jones and saying like Mac Jones would be a really good fit for the Eagles, maybe in the second round, or maybe, you know, maybe late first round trading up, like, because he seems like he's like a smart passer. He was able to run, like, anytime a guy can run an offense efficiently, like, I think that's always worth taking into account. You know, he is pretty solid in the pocket. Like, there's stuff there that you can evaluate with him. But like every year we do this with like one prospect or two prospects where the hype just gets so out of control that then like the pushback on it like borders on being hating. And it's just like, it's like, what are we doing? Like, why aren't we like actually like having a conversation about, you know, how exciting it is that we get like two elite quarterback prospects in the same draft, for the fact that there's like four like really incredible wide receiver prospects in this class. Like, there's so much, but we just get into the quarterback thing every season, and it's never tiresome, ended. Man. It's tiresome, and like I feel bad for Mac Jones now, because, you know, either he's gonna it's gonna be like an AJ McCarron situation where you get just like weeks and weeks and weeks in of hype, and then they get drafted in the fourth round, or like it's real, and all of these guys are just parroting what they hear in the NFL, and like you have fan expectation being like, this dude's gonna step in on day one and be great. And then he's not, because he's not. And then there's like another overreaction cycle to that. And it's like, we're just setting these kids up to fail, and it sucks.
It does, because Mac Jones is a good player. And I believe it was a week or two ago, Albert Breer had Mac Jones going number 28 to the Steelers, which sounds like about right. Like, that would be a great, you know, great area where you'd feel good about taking Mac Jones. Even in the teens, I could see why a team would take Mac Jones, because in my opinion, he is the most accurate quarterback. He does know where to go with the ball. He's much better in the pocket than people give him credit for. Yes, he's a terrible athlete. Like, he's not. And when I say terrible, I'm using that in relatively to these elite athletes that we're talking about. And I feel like when you have to use context, we're talking about the quarterbacks. We have to compare them to the other guys in this draft. So, Jones, I feel like the biggest difference of circling back to the pro days, is he just had to follow Justin Fields, or Justin Fields follow him. And we kind of saw the difference in talent, in quote unquote traits, from a guy just putting everything he has to throw a simple 40-yard pass down the sideline, whereas Justin Fields can throw, you know, these fadeaways and they'll go 55 yards with a flip.
Right. Well, I mean, here's the thought exercise, right? It's like, okay, well, what about Mac Jones versus Jalen Hurts? Like, Mac Jones sat behind Tua and Jalen Hurts at Alabama for four years, and had to wait until Tua was basically out of the picture for him to get the starting opportunity. He starts for 1 year. He plays great football. You know, he produces an extremely high level. He was a Heisman candidate. He's a top five pick, according to, you know. Jalen Hurts started at Alabama as a freshman, got better every year of his career, only got ousted as quarterback because, you know, Tua played so well in college, transfers to Oklahoma, is a Heisman candidate at Oklahoma, produces out of his mind at Oklahoma, better athlete, bigger arm, more starting experience, second round.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so how do we explain that, right? How do we explain that course of evaluation? And it's just like, I mean, there are very obvious reasons why. Because, like, you know, the NFL loves them a tall white pocket passer, right?
Every year.
And you know, big media evaluators love them the same kind of quarterback. But it's so ridiculous to just, like, as soon as you scratch away at the surface, like, at least with Zach Wilson, like, I get it, right? Like, I'm like, okay, big throws all over the place. Easily, like, any coach will, like, see a big throw like that and be like, okay, yeah, I want to draft that guy. Whether or not it's right or wrong, I mean, it's like, they're very different prospects, but it reminds me of, like, the Josh Allen situation where it's like, okay, this guy kind of sucked in college, but okay, I get it, right? He's big, he's athletic, he can throw the ball 80 yards. Zach Wilson, he's smaller, he's small, he is athletic, and he's got a big arm, but it's like there are, like, pinpoint traits that you can kind of identify as being like, okay, that's why an NFL team wants to draft him.
So we just talked about Jabril Cox, who North Dakota State, and people always talk about the level of competition for Trey Lance, and we saw Jabril Cox go from NDSU to LSU seamlessly, like, no issues at all. And now he's still, like, he's probably, it even helped his draft stock in different. So if Trey Lance is at Alabama this year, do they win the national championship?
100%.
Why is that so difficult to, like, why is that so hard for us to process? We talk about this guy as if he's this raw prospect, but why wouldn't he be able to do the same thing Mac Jones did?
Yeah, and it's like, this is no hate. I mean, any Eagles fan will know that I've written extensively about Cade Johnson. I'm getting my Dakotas mixed up. I apologize. But the thing is, like, if you gave Trey Lance Devontae Smith to throw to, it's like obviously his numbers are going to look great. Trey Lance didn't throw an interception in college. Like, that's insane. Can we, like, he ran for 1,000 yards and didn't throw an interception in college. I mean, just purely from a statistical standpoint, that's bonkers that happened. Yeah, I don't get it. And it's, and like, with going back to Justin Fields, the dude is so clearly special. And not just from a trait standpoint, but, like, from, like, above the shoulders. That Clemson game was preposterous to witness.
Yeah.
I thought he was dead. like that hit that he took midway through the game, I was like, damn, like, he's done. Like, there's no way. And I don't like being the guy who's like, oh, this guy's so tough. But to, like, go out after getting your ribs just destroyed like that.
They were broken. Let's call it what it, like, he probably broke his ribs.
They probably gave him a shot of some stuff in the locker room. They trotted him back out there and he throws, like, five more touchdowns. It's like, and now we're having
Alabama the next week and still plays very well considering the circumstances.
Yeah. And we're having a conversation about, like, Mac Jones being bad. Like, give me a break. And Zach Wilson. Or Zach Wilson being bad. Just give me a break, you know? Did we watch the Coastal Carolina game, you know? But we go through this every year, you know? Every year, a quarterback kind of ends up getting anointed against all odds, and it's always very strange to witness.
So if you were to rank, and I will give mine first before we get out of here. So let's rank the quarterbacks. I will say, and I wrote this piece, go to NinersNation.com, by the way. A lot of people read and commented on that. I have not read the comments. I'm sure they all agree with me. So anyway, Trevor Lawrence, QB1. Justin Fields, 1B. Trey Lawrence, 3. Wilson, 4. Jones, 5. That is not very popular. I feel like more and more people are having those similar rankings. I think Lance is going to be so much better than people think because, you know, we're stuck in these stereotypes. I think Fields, no-brainer. I would be surprised if he's not a star. There are so many things that he does well, and one of them, accuracy, who, for whatever reason, he does not get credit for being one of the most accurate quarterbacks, not just this past year, but in the past few years. Like, he's hitting these guys in the face, in the numbers. Like, the ball catches them for him. So it's pretty easy to have those two guys high. And then Wilson, just not – you said he has a big arm. I don't think he has a big arm. I think he has a good arm, but when I think big arm, I'm thinking of – the ball not fluttering, the ball not dying in the air as it does with Wilson when he has to throw the ball outside the numbers. And then again, Jones, he's good, but he's just not the same as the other players. And I think that's where, again, we have to add context. So that those would be my five. How would you rank the top five?
Yeah, I would definitely go Lawrence, Fields, bigger gap, Lance,
yeah.
gap Wilson, gap Jones. And and then it doesn't really matter after that. I mean, I kind of like Jamie Newman. That's like my not so hot take is like my QB6 is Jamie Newman. Not that anybody cares, but he's probably going to be a solid backup of the NFL.
Yeah, I wish that he played this past season so we could have had a shot to see him, especially at Georgia, because they needed a quarterback and he would have done
very well. Yeah, he would have looked nice with those wide receivers.
Well, that'll do it for us. Again, thanks for joining us, Ben, out of nowhere, pretty much. But it was fun.
I rolled out of bed to some text messages about doing this, and I was like, hell yeah.
Let's do it. All right, well, right on. Thanks again. Please rate, subscribe, review, wherever it is that you get your podcast. Let us know how you feel about these. And we will, if you have any ideas of what you would like us to talk about as well, we are all ears. So my name's Kyle Posey. Thank you, as always, for listening.